Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bat Around. I'm your host, Paul Valley. Waiting in the green room is Ryan Blake, having some more technical difficulties, but we'll get him on the show here in just a minute. Corbin Burnes and the Orioles came out absolutely shoving on Thursday afternoon, taking down the Angels 11-3 before a sellout crowd, and what a day it was. But before we get into that, I want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Atmans. Craving that classic New York deli experience? Look no further than the new Atmans Deli in Baltimore's Harbor Point. Corned beef piled high, hand-rolled bagels, and something different, a bar! Atmans Harbor Point. Go to atmansdeli.com for daily specials today. And welcome into the Bat Around, folks. Still waiting on Ryan to figure out his technical difficulties here, but Corbin Burnes, what an Orioles debut. Six innings pitched, one hit, one earned run. That one hit and one earned run coming off a first inning home run off the bat of Mike Trout. If you're going to give it up, it might as well be to Mike Trout, right? But no walks, 11 strikeouts on just 82 pitches. Corbin Burnes absolutely shoving in his team debut. Anthony Santander, player of the game, a home run, a sac fly, an RBI ground out. Four RBIs for Santander. Cedric Mullins with a home run to dead center field, a three-run shot. Mike Trout jumping at the wall, brought back memories of when he robbed J.J. Hardy back in 2012, but it was not to be as the ball went over his glove for the three-run shot for Santander. Adley Rutschman, at one point, he had reached base in eight consecutive plate appearances over his last two opening days. He started the day 2-for-2, ended the day 2-for-4 with a walk, two RBIs, three runs scored for Rutschman hitting out of the two-hole. Jorge Mateo started at second base. He went 1-for-3 with a double, a walk, two runs, and a stolen base. Hit a shot, I believe, in his second at-bat that looked like it might get out. Was caught just in front of the wall. Likely would have been a home run 3 years ago before they moved that wall back. But it was not to be. But Jorge Mateo taking the hot spring and translating it to the regular season. Just like we saw last year, we're going to see what's going to happen with him moving forward this year as a part-time platoon player for the team. And then Ramon Urias, only Orioles player with a plate appearance that did not record a hit. He did walk and reach on an error, but it was a full team effort for the Orioles, overtaking the Angels 11-3 on opening day. And I got to tell you, there is something about this team, folks. There's something about them. The aura around this team, the vibes around the ballpark that day. Of course, somber start to things as we remembered the passing of Peter Angelos and those who lost their lives in the tragic Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the friends and families of the people that lost their lives in that tragic collapse. Hopefully the city, the state, the country can rebuild that bridge. Huge port that's going to have a huge disruption and effect on the economy. Hopefully they can get that waterway cleared and get that bridge built quickly. But that's not the important thing right now. The important thing is that this was tragic and people lost their lives. So I thought some prayers out to the friends, family, and loved ones of those who have suffered through this. But yeah, those opening day vibes, man, it was something else. It was the O in the national anthem was the loudest I've ever heard it. Just everybody around the ballpark, nobody was there thinking, what if the Orioles lose? Everybody just knew that this team was going to go out there and they were going to win. We just knew that they were one of the best teams in baseball, and it was a foregone conclusion they were going to win that game. And they left no doubt. They got started early and often, scoring 11 runs on the day. Again, every starter except for Ramon Urias recorded a hit. Even Ryan O'Hearn came off the bench with a big double there in the seventh inning, pinch hitting for Jordan Westberg. What a day at the ballpark. One that I won't soon forget. And, you know, Corbin Burnes, and I took a lot of crap. I took a lot of crap because I sat there and I said, count me as one of those people who's starting to develop concerns because of how bad he looked in spring training. Now, I sent out that tweet in the second inning of his second to last start of the spring when he allowed back-to-back home runs and then two more runs scored on throwing errors by Burnes. he had four perfect innings out of his five innings that game. And then the next game he went out and shoved, because that's what Corbin Burns does, to alleviate any of those fears. Now, I did say I still have faith in him. I'm still getting people quote tweeting me even as of last night about that. I have faith in Corbin Burns, but I'm an Orioles fan, right? And we've seen all these players that have come in here that were supposed to be our big pitching acquisition of the offseason that fell flat on their face. And though Corbin Burns is better than just about every one of those guys that came through here, there's still that modicum of fear from, or PTSD, call it what you will. It's not completely unreasonable to have seen what's gone on with this team in the past. I mean, you look at the fact that I'm 39 years old and I've seen 7-8 winning seasons from this team in my entire life. I'm sorry, 13 winning seasons, I think, in my entire life, and the 6 playoff appearances. So there's some PTSD there. Corbin Burns alleviated any fears that we might have had. I think Ryan got his technical difficulties figured out. Ryan, good morning. How you doing, man?
Good morning. I've been better. First of all, I thought it was Friday. I don't know why. And now I'm turning my computer on, and I've been staring at a white screen for about 4 minutes. So I'm on my phone, but I'm here, and I'm excited to talk some baseball, man. What an atmosphere we had on opening day. We're so back.
Yeah, it was an awesome day. I was just talking about that and how I had shown a modicum of concern over Corbin Burns in the spring. I've gotten pretty blasted for it, but you know, I never said that I didn't believe he was going to be good, but he was better than good on Thursday, man. Talk to us about your experience on opening day.
Yeah, well, the day itself, I mean, the weather was cold. We're front row of the upper deck. It's kind of a wind vortex up there at times. Mm-hmm. So it was real cold, but other than that, it was pretty much the perfect day. We didn't do any real partying down there. We went to Section 771, I believe it's called, the bar next to Pickles. Mm-hmm. We were there for a drink and then went into the stadium really early. They were taking BP, so we sat down there, got some jimmies, enjoyed ourselves. And, man, the game itself, watching Corbin Burns take the mound was really special. It's exciting to finally have a pitcher like that, you know, on our team. It's really, really cool. I remember he gave up the homer to Trout. You know, we're sitting there thinking, you know, he strikes out the first two guys, and it's like, man, what a statement it would be to strike out the side in his Orioles debut on opening day. And then Trout goes yard. It's like, all right, well, he's still Mike Trout, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. And then he gets the next bat, I believe it was Taylor Ward, and then he's walking back to the dugout, and you could see kind of his body language was, I'm so mad I gave up that home run. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I saw that, I turned over to Megan and I said, you see how mad he is? He's not going to give up another run. Well, he didn't give up another base runner after that, going 6 innings, 11 strikeouts. He retired the next 16 batters after the home run, pulled it up. I think it was 81 pitches. So a really good outing for him. Still stretching him out a little bit. We know eventually he'll be able to go 100, 110, because that's what he does. But man, what a game, what an atmosphere. The offense got rolling. Everybody had a hit. It really, really good to see.
Yeah. The entire, it was a full team effort. Ramon Arias was actually the only player without a hit, but he did walk and reach base on an error. And just the vibes around the ballpark, man, like I was talking before, we got you figured out and got you on the show today about, it was a foregone conclusion they were going to win that game. Like, there was not one person in that sold-out crowd that thought that they were going to lose that game. Everything that's gone on the past week around this ball club, around this city, around this state, it was an absolute statement. And they talked about the next chapter and turning the page. And boy, did they do that on Thursday. That O during the national anthem was louder than anything I've ever heard coming from that stadium. And it was just – it was a perfect day. It was an absolutely perfect day. Now, I will say – then on my end, my buddy and I got down there and we weren't sure what we were going to do. And if you followed along with me on Twitter, oh man, we went to a tailgate from a title company that invited me to it. It was $25. It was a $25 donation to St. Jude's, and alcohol was included in that $25. And we happened to know the bartender. My buddy used to date her. Mm-hmm. And so He had, I think, four drinks, and they were all about 98% booze, and they were all filled pretty much to the rim of a cup that was about this big and about about this wide. So my buddy can throw them back. I was standing there. I was talking to somebody who I'd known from my high school days, who I hadn't seen in years. And I turn and I see my buddy, and he's just swaying.
Oh man,
he's just swaying. And I was like, oh no. we leave. He's being funnily aggressive. My buddy, when I say funnily aggressive, he's not an aggressive guy. But when he gets drunk, he's jokingly aggressive. Yeah. And it's pretty funny, but he was beyond that. We get to the stadium. He can't find our tickets on his phone. So we ended up getting three rally towels because we walked in, we got through the metal detector. They gave us our two rally towels, and then he couldn't find the tickets. So I had to pull him off to the side. It probably took 2 minutes, but it felt like way longer because we're scrambling on opening day, not being able to find our tickets. And I'm calling him an a-hole. Like, all mad at him. Like, if you just caused me to miss opening day, I will never forgive you. But I found them on his ballpark app. And then we got another rally towel because one woman didn't realize that we hadn't gotten any, that we had already gotten some. Mm. We got into the stadium. And then we go and we sit in what I thought was our seats. I sit down. He says, I'm going to go get some food. I'll be back, in a drunken manner. He says this.
Yeah.
So that was before the orange carpet. That was at like 2:15. And I don't see him again. He's gone. Top of the first goes by. Bottom of the first goes by. Top of the second goes by. And I'm like, dude, where the hell are you? I'm calling him. I'm texting him. He's not responding. So then I'm like, that's when I tweeted out, I came with my best friend to opening day. I haven't seen him for 90 minutes. I'm pretty sure he's in the drunk tank. Fun fact, I went to the police. They don't have a drunk tank at Camden Yards. They either if you're that drunk, they just escort you out. But there were two ambulances. Mm. And the police officer says to me, there's a woman in the front ambulance and there's a man in the back ambulance. I was like, can you check and see if it's my friend? I was like, his name is Adam. He goes, he talks, he comes back. He goes, they said they have a guy named Adam in there. Can you show me a picture? He takes my phone with a picture of my buddy. He goes there. It's not my friend. So it's a random dude named Adam.
What are the odds?
Right, exactly. In the back of this ambulance, I go back to my seats, and I'm sitting there, and this woman and her family come up, and they're like, I think you're sitting in our seats. I go, nope, section 85. These are my seats. And the guy behind me goes, this is section 83. And I turn to him. I go, I don't think you're right, but I'm going to go check. I get up. I go down. I look. It says section 83. So then I go to the correct section. He's not there. I'm sitting there. He finally says, I'm over by Stuggies. What had happened was we went to section 83. We sat in the wrong seats. He went to go get food and went back to the right seats. Mm. And so he's waiting for me for two innings in the right seats. I'm waiting for him for two innings in the wrong seats. I find out the next morning that the reason he wasn't answering my phone call and text messages, he was so drunk he fell asleep in the seats for 45 minutes.
What? Wow.
For 45 minutes. It was
fell asleep.
Fell asleep.
At opening day.
I've taken him to opening day before and he fell asleep in 2014.
Is this just what he does? He's the guy that falls asleep at opening day?
Well, in 2014... it turned out he was really sick and didn't realize it.
Oh.
So he fell asleep. He had like two beers that day and he fell asleep. He called a Nelson Cruz homer and said that Cruz homered. He was going to buy me two hot dogs. Uh-huh. He woke up just in time for the Cruz home run, went and bought me two hot dogs, came back and fell asleep again. He was sick for like 10 days after that. He got the flu.
Jeez.
And didn't realize it. So really long, unimportant story. But if you follow along with me on Twitter, that's what happened. Pretty stupid on both of our parts. But this time around, he fell asleep because his bartender friend did him a disservice. So I hope he doesn't mind me telling that story. It's pretty funny and pretty ridiculous and just added to what was just an absolutely epic opening day. Anthony Santander, home run, four RBI. Cedric Mullins, a three-run homer. Rutschman at one point have reached base in 8 consecutive opening day plate appearances, finished the day 2-for-4 with a walk, 2 RBIs, and 3 runs scored. Jorge Mateo got to start at second base. He dropped a great throw from Austin Hayes that would have nabbed a runner at second base on the double in the 7th inning. And he made a bad throw on what would have been a double play. But he went 1-for-3 with a double, a walk, and hit a ball that likely would have been a home run at the old Camden Yards. He's off to a decent start for the Orioles, just like we saw last year. Hopefully it lasts longer than the first month of the season. Again, Ramon Urias, only player without a hit for the Orioles on that day. But just an awesome day all the way around. And if you can follow this team and you're feeling the things that I'm feeling from this team, it is going to be a really, really fun season.
And what an at-bat by Cedric Mullins on that home run, too. Mm-hmm. He was off to an 0-for-3 start. He and Urias were the only guys who hadn't recorded a hit yet. And then I think he had 2 pop-outs and a ground out before the home run, Mullins did. And that at-bat, he popped foul 4 or 5 pitches. And I'm kind of sitting there thinking, like, man, Mullins seemed to have a problem last year with popping out a little bit too much. Is that going to carry over into 2024? Mm-hmm. And then he takes a pitch that was up and away and hits a line drive homer over Trout's glove in center field. And first of all, what an adjustment to make, to be under everything, fouling everything back, and then to get on top of probably the highest pitch of the at-bat. Mm-hmm. Really, really impressive for Cedric Mullins. So it was good to see him do that. I think that'll be good for his confidence going forward.
Yeah, it was definitely I was sitting there and the Orioles had 2 guys on base. They're up 8-1 at this point. And I turned to my buddy and I said, watch, Cedric Mullins is going to hit a 3-run homer just because. And then he hits the home run and the guy sitting next to me goes, you called that. I was like, oh my God, thank you. Somebody else heard me say it. That's awesome. But it was just a great day all the way around. And if you're looking to take advantage of a great day and you've been putting off taking advantage of the offer we've been telling you about for Sportsbook, wait no longer. This is the final weekend to take advantage of using our code PressBox23, where you can receive up to $250 in a same-day first bet match, win or lose. Today, the Orioles are favored at -158 with the over-under set at 8.5 runs and the spread set at 1.5. So remember, this is your final chance to use the code PressBox23 when you sign up at Superbook and receive a same-day first bet match up to $250, win or lose. It says 3 people are in here. I'm assuming that's you on the computer now.
Yeah, I tried to join on the computer, but it looks like I'm having weird issues again. I'll just stay on the phone, I suppose.
All right. Sounds good to me. Dylan Tate, Ryan, first game action since the end of 2022. His sinker topped out at 91.9 miles per hour. He sat around 90 miles an hour much of his outing. 2 walks, a hit, 2 runs, 1 earned in the inning of work. 26 pitches, 14 balls from Dylan Tate. Are you concerned about his dip in velocity? Because he was throwing much harder than that in spring training. I don't know if it's because it was colder and he's trying to conserve his arm. Maybe it was nerves, trying not to go full force in the first game of the year. Was there any concern from you? He did not look good when he came into pitch on Thursday.
Yeah. He threw a pitch and I looked up at the, the little thing that shows, and it said sinker 89. And mm-hmm. My first thought was, he was missing the zone. Got squeezed a couple times, but he dealt with a little kind of bad batted ball luck. And Gifo had that little chopper that would have been a routine ground out to third if they were playing him straight up. And then had an opportunity to tag him out at second. Mateo dropped the ball on the throw. Just dealt with poor control, poor command. Lack of velocity, and then his defense didn't really pick him up all that much. Could have gotten out of the inning scoreless if they had been able to turn that double play at the end. So the results, I think, look worse than they should have been for Dylan Tate. But yeah, I'm absolutely concerned about the velocity. He's a guy who should be sitting, somewhere between 95 and 97 with that sinker, and he didn't come close to that on opening day. I'm almost surprised we And maybe I just missed it, but I don't believe that Brandon Hyde addressed any of that. Maybe it's just that he wasn't fully ready. I don't know. But he seemed fine in the spring. So it's hard to look at that and not think like what's going on there, because you shouldn't be dipping that much with your velocity. I mean, Corbin Burns was exactly where he should have been. Keegan Aiken was where he should have been. Mike Bauman was where he should have been. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can blame it on the weather. Maybe you can say that we had a huge lead, so he wasn't, you know, he was preserving some bullets. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, absolutely didn't look great, but dealt with a little bad luck as well.
Yeah, we're going to see how things progress for him this year. And to your point, I didn't hear Brandon Hyde address it. I haven't seen any of the beat writers address it. It just seems like it's much ado about nothing. But when you're seeing a guy who is throwing 100 with a plyo ball in the offseason and then touching 96 to 98 in spring training, and then you see him hitting 90, 89, topping out at 91.9 on the radar gun in the stadium – yeah, you're going to think twice about that. And, you know, I'm not going to hedge my bet, so to speak, and say I still have faith. I'm worried about, I mean, that's a 4 mile an hour difference from what we were accustomed to seeing in spring training. So it's a wait and see approach with Dylan Tate. Maybe, like you said, because they had such a big lead, he was just trying to preserve some bullets. And the next time out, maybe in a closer game, you might see him really ramping it up. We'll see, but right now, count me as those concerned that his velocity is significantly down. Now, Mike Bauman, Keegan Aiken, they pitch the rest of the way. Between Bauman, Aiken, and Tate, they combine to throw 56 pitches, 29 balls. Bauman threw 8 of his 13 pitches for balls. Aiken, 7 of his 17 pitches. And as we said, Tate, 14 of his 26 pitches were for balls. Bauman issued a 5-pitch walk to Aaron Hicks to lead off the 6th, but he got a pop out and a double play on his next 8 pitches. Keegan Aiken, a clean inning with 2 strikeouts. It's one game, Ryan, but we weren't exactly stone cold confident about this bullpen heading in. Guys like Craig Kimbrell, Yennier Cano, Danny Coulomb, Cionel Perez, they did not pitch in the game because they weren't needed. Those are your high leverage relievers. So that combined with it being one game, we can maybe kind of pump the brakes on that a little bit. But your thoughts on the bullpen through one game and what we saw on Thursday?
Yeah, I did hear Hyde say in his postgame presser that, you know, it was a good opportunity with a big lead to kind of get the lower leverage guys a little bit of extra work. And, you know, he said you can, you know, play spring, you can practice all you want live BP, but you can't replicate regular season game action. And so he got in the guys that he wanted to be able to see some regular game action and kind of smoothly transition them into the regular season. But yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't great. You know, they only gave up 2 runs in those 3 innings. But after watching Corbin Burns dominate the way he did, it was definitely a change of pace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was a closer game, you know, some of the momentum would have been taken away. And then, you know, you never know what can happen. I'm not too concerned over the state of the bullpen yet. I mean, like you said, we talked last week about how that's if this Orioles team has a weakness, the bullpen is probably it. But, you know, I'm going to wait and see with some of these guys. Keegan Aiken had a great spring. Mike Bauman was fine, earned his spot back, of course. You know, we've talked about Tate and how we want to see, you know, a little bit of an uptick in velo, a little bit of uptick in control. Hopefully everything's structurally okay with him. But, you know, the bullpen as a whole, it's not going to be – it's not going to be pretty. We've got some guys who can come out and dominate. We've also got guys who can come out and put up some crooked numbers for the other team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully those crooked numbers come like they did on Thursday, where it's, you know, we have a 10-run lead and we can afford to give up a few. That's the hope. But I'm curious to see how the higher leverage guys pitch when we have closer games.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious about that myself. I personally think the Orioles are going to sweep the Angels. I don't think the Angels are a very good team. I think that the Orioles with Grayson Rodriguez going today and Tyler Wells going tomorrow to close things out with the way this offense swung it in spring training, the way they swung it on opening day, I think that the Orioles are going to sweep this opening series and head into the next home series with Kansas City, really riding a wave of riding a wave of momentum there is going to carry them to a strong start to this season, where they may get off to a hot start and never look back. We'll get talk about it in a little bit. The Yankees are off to a pretty solid start themselves. You can get a solid start to your weekend by heading over to Ruth's Chris. Whether you're celebrating a special milestone, entertaining clients, or simply enjoying a night out, count on Ruth's Chris to deliver the finest steaks, the best service, and a level of hospitality that has made Ruth's Chris one of the most revered names in steak since 1965. Make your reservation now at ruthschris.com. So, Ryan, let's talk a little bit about this Orioles roster. We talked all offseason about Ryan McKenna running down that orange carpet somehow on opening day. And then literally 2 days later, after our last show, McKenna's DFA'd. The Ryan McKenna era is over. The Ferrari is permanently in the garage. We really thought that he was going to be on this roster. He doesn't make it. Colton Cowser is your fourth outfielder now, and he's a lefty. Then we thought it was going to be Tyler Nevin because he was the only guy on the roster that made sense at that point. Tyler Nevin, DFA'd, and the O's go and sign Tony Kemp. Tony Kemp, a career 238 hitter, but he's got those vibes, right? He's another left-handed hitting middle infielder, plays a little bit of outfield, who wears a number 12. So Ruth Neto-Dor, Adam Frazier, Tony Kemp. I will say, and this is who I am, right? When the Orioles do something I don't like, I am outspoken about it. It doesn't mean I don't have faith in the team, that I don't love the team. I just don't want guys on the team that I don't think can help the team. I don't know. The more that I look, that I read about and see clips of Tony Kemp, I don't think he's a guy that can't help this team. In fact, he will probably be my favorite of the three guys that I just mentioned, O'Dor, Frazier, and Kemp. Just has apparently he's just a hell of a nice guy. He's got that flair. He plays the game 100 miles an hour. He looks like a fun player. The 238 lifetime batting average leaves a lot to be desired, but he's got a low chase rate and a low whiff rate. Tony Kemp, he's on the Orioles roster. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts here. First of all, regarding McKenna, obviously our reaction to him not making the team was one of surprise, because we expected him to sneak his way on once again. Mm-hmm. But I guess rejoicement that he didn't. With that said, when do we find out if he cleared waivers? Because I remember DJ Stewart being DFA'd, clearing waivers, getting assigned to Norfolk, and then 2 weeks later, he was called back up because of an injury. And I have a feeling McKenna's somehow, he's going to find his way back somehow. I have a feeling. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But guys like that tend to do that with this Orioles team. Anyway, independent of that, Tyler Nevin was expected to make the roster with McKenna and Colton Wong being told that they were not going to make the roster. And it looked like that would be the case until Tony Kemp came around. And when Nevin was expected to be the guy, it was, okay, he hit his way onto the team. He had a really good spring, right? His spring numbers were excellent. And he's a guy who has been on this team before and knows a lot of the guys. He's played with a lot of these guys before. So it's like, all right, maybe it fits. But at the same time, he's another first base, maybe throw him in the corner outfield if you're desperate kind of player. The Orioles already have two of those in Ryan Mountcastle and Ryan O'Hearn. They're going to be your first baseman. I don't want Tyler Nevin at third. I don't think the defense is good enough to be there instead of a Gunnar Henderson or a Jordan Westberg.
He played a lot of corner outfield this spring.
Yeah. But he's not a corner outfielder. At least he shouldn't be. I don't think he's good enough to be one. That didn't really make a ton of sense to me. Tony Kemp fits more from the standpoint of, a little more versatility, where he can play middle infield and corner outfield. Second and left is where he's most comfortable. And you talk about the attitude. He's a good dude. He's a fun guy to be around, from everything you see and hear from A's fans. And even on opening day, we were up in our seats. Our seats are above the Orioles dugout in the upper deck. And so, you know, we're looking down before the game, and, you know, a bunch of the new ownership group is out there, and they're wearing their jerseys with the number 24 on the back and their names. And the only other Oriole that was out there was Tony Kemp, and he was interacting with fans and taking pictures and signing autographs with kids. And like, he just seemed like it was his second day with this team, and he's already like, let me assimilate myself to the culture and the stadium and the fans. And that was really cool to see. So from that standpoint, I think he's a very good fit. From a baseball standpoint, he should be the last guy off the bench. I don't expect a lot of playing time for him. I think he's just kind of a warm body to have until Jackson Holliday is deemed ready. Jackson Holliday, by the way, launched a home run last night in his first AAA at bat against a lefty, by the way.
Yeah, so, we're going to get to that here. Norfolk had a night last night. They had an absolute night. But Tony Kemp, and I think that's why I'm going to like him. Right.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes, he's more athletic than Ruth Nettodor and Adam Frazier. Probably doesn't have quite the same stick. I mean, Ruth Nettodor at this point in his career is a 200 hitter. And in fact, he's playing in Japan. Bruce, stop. He's trying to chew cords. At this point in his career, he's probably a little bit better of a hitter than Odor, but doesn't have the power. Frazier had those 13 home runs last year. But those guys played every day. Right, they were everyday second baseman for the Orioles, whereas Kemp, I think, like you said, he's going to be the last guy off the bench. Maybe he's a defensive replacement. Maybe he's a pinch runner. He'll probably get a start here or there, but I don't think that he's going to get much more than 100, 120 at-bats this year if he sticks around for the whole season. That's assuming that he'll be here the whole season. He might make it just through the first month. And a lot of people, like, my knee-jerk reaction was the reaction that I had with Odor and Frazier, because – they were being brought in here to play every day. And I had to stop, take a step back and say, this guy's not here to play every day. He's here to come off the bench.
Yeah.
And with that, with a guy who's got that attitude, that mentality, and he's that fun of a player, I'm okay with that move. I'm really okay with that move. He's not the guy that's blocking Jackson Holliday.
No.
Like, you can be like, why is Kemp here and Holliday's down wasting away in Norfolk? Well, if Kemp weren't here and Holliday had his spot, is Holliday wasting away on the bench? Is that what we're looking at there?
Right.
Ramon Arias is the guy who's taking playing time away from Jackson Holliday. And it's not Ramon Arias' fault either. He had a good spring. He's a former Gold Glove winner who's a major league veteran at this point. Yeah. He was trying to make a roster and make a living himself. So we'll get to Jackson Holliday here in a minute. But I'm okay with the Kemp signing the more that I think about it. I'm really okay with McKenna not being here. And to answer your question, after he was released – where do you have? Okay. After he was released, McKenna, now the Orioles have a week to either trade him or to pass him through waivers. I don't think it's going to be a week before he is claimed by another team. Maybe Tyler Nevin makes it through and ends up as depth for the Orioles. Maybe gets a cup of coffee at the big league level at some point out of necessity this year. But I don't think Ryan McKenna, because of his track record in the minors, because he can play all three outfield positions, has a little bit of speed and has shown flashes at times where he can handle the stick at least adequately for a stretch. Somebody's going to claim him. He's not going to play for the Orioles again unless they sign him for some reason. But he's not going to play for the Orioles again, in my opinion. What company makes your home more energy efficient, purifies your air, kills all viruses, and qualifies you for $6,000 in rebates? Ryan, do you know?
Is it AJ Michaels by chance?
AJ Michaels, heating and air conditioning in Baltimore and Annapolis. You can check out AJ Michaels at ajmichaels.com for more. We talked about Norfolk last night. They were up something like 8-1 in the second inning of that ball game. Every player in the lineup had recorded a hit by the end of the second inning. Jackson Holliday, as you mentioned, Ryan, homers in his first at bat against a left-handed pitcher, no less, after being resigned because, in part, they wanted to face more lefties after going 2-for-14 versus left-handed pitching in the spring. He finished the day 3-for-5 with a home run, a double, a sac fly, and 4 RBIs. And the thing, are you one of those people that hates when somebody says RBIs?
I don't hate it because I was so used to it for so long, but I do believe that it's incorrect.
Yeah, it's RBI, but that seems singular. And right. He had multiple, but you're not going to say RSBI, right?
He had four run batted ins.
Well, I'll just say that. He went three for out of the double, a home run, a sac fly, and four runs batted in. It's funny. Four what? Yeah, four steaks.
Four ribeyes, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's funny, man, because Andy Kotzka was at the game last night, and he was reporting on it, covering the Tides, and he said that before the game, Holiday said, man, I gotta crush lefties. He's like, I really want to hit a home run tonight. And then he hits a home run in his first at bat. That is a special kind of player that can say, I gotta crush lefties. I really want to hit a home run tonight. And then you just go out and do it. You just go out and do it. Like, I'm like, at this point in my life playing baseball, I'm like, man, I really hope I don't strike out. And he's like, I'm going to go out there and hit a home run. And then he just does it.
Immediately, too. First at bat.
First at bat, 103 miles an hour off the bat, 408 feet. Just a bomb. I heard that it rolled into the water out there at Tides Park. Jackson Holiday, he was a triple shy of a cycle, had one more bat, struck out because clearly he sucks. Why else would he be in the minors? But yeah, 3 for 5 with a double and a home run and 4 RBI in his first Norfolk start of the season last night. Connor Norby started in right field, and we said on this show last week, expect to see Connor Norby play a lot of corner outfield down there while Jackson's getting those starts at second base. He goes 4 for 6 with a double, 2 ribs. And 95 miles an hour or more off the bat in 4 of his 6 at-bats. Heston Kjerstad, he started at first base, dropped an easy throw that, unfortunately for him, hit him right in the glove on a ground ball to second base. It was a fine throw from Holiday, and he just dropped it. So a little work in progress there at first base, but Kjerstad goes 2 for 5, double, 2 ribs. Colby Banwood, third base, 2 for 5. Chase McDermott, up and down night for him. The broadcasters did not allude to how uneven his night was. They just said 4 1/3 innings pitch. He allowed just the 1 hit with 6 strikeouts, but he reached that 85 pitch mark. Well, he reached that 85 pitch mark because he walked 5 in 4 1/3 innings. And people were talking about, does Chase McDermott have a chance to make this team out spring training with the injuries and the rotation? Well, 5 walks in the first game of the season is Exhibit A. Why Chase McDermott is not ready to make his big league debut. He is the reigning Orioles minor league pitcher of the year for the organization after dominating a Double-A and Triple-A last year, but still has some work to do with his control.
Yeah, you know, overall, a great night for the Tides last night. It's interesting to see them kind of shuffling guys around a little bit. You'd expect Kjerstad to be out in right field, but they're trying to get Connor Norby some work out there. Maybe there's a spot on the roster for him at some point. So it's good to have the roster versatility. Obviously, nice to see everyone hit. We knew coming out of camp that AAA was going to have some dudes, and they certainly do. Norby, absolutely one of them. You got to feel bad for Norby at a certain point. This is his third season with the Tides. Mm-hmm. He's done nothing but hit and hit well, and there's just no room for him.
Yeah,
he's not even the next man up. That's Jackson Holiday, and then it's probably Kjerstad, and then it might be Mayo. So he's down there in the pecking order, which sucks because he's a really, really good hitter, and almost makes me wish we would trade him so that he could, you know, get the Joey Ortiz treatment and have an opportunity to actually play in the big somewhere.
Opening day second baseman for the Brewers, Joey Ortiz, and he got a hit in his first at bat.
He did. He poked one right past Lindor, dove for it, and just under his glove. So that was good to see. Happy for Joey Ortiz, of course, and hope he kills it out there. DL Hall getting the start for the Brewers today. I'm excited to see him as well.
Hey, let's take a pause for a second.
Sure.
Because I want to get your take on the Rhys Hoskins, Jeff McNeil incident yesterday. Because I saw it because of a tweet that you put out where you were reposting it. I thought Jeff McNeil looked like an ass in that situation. It's baseball, man. Shut the hell up. I'm sorry your team stinks now and that you guys are losing in the late in the game. Like, cry about it. That was my reaction.
Yeah. That's the way baseball has been played for 120 years. Mm-hmm. Like, you try to break up a double play, It's and it was an entirely legal slide. He slid into the bag, and yeah, he went over the bag a little bit, but he held on to the bag. It's not like Jeff McNeil, who slid like four body lengths away to try to break up an Orlando Arcia double play last year, the year before, whenever that was. That screenshot was floating around of McNeil sliding nowhere close to second base. Yeah, man, like I understand you can get hurt. You also shouldn't have your feet planted.
Thank you.
At that point, I mean, look. I thought he looked like an ass as well. And there were people talking about how Hoskins was soft for leaving and then chirping. It's like, all right, well, when McNeil was yelling at him at second base, it wasn't really a situation yet. I would imagine Hoskins was just kind of like, shut up, dude. And he got up and jogged back to the dugout because he was out on the play, right? And then that's when the benches started to clear and the chirping was getting worse and the bullpen's emptied. So, yeah, that's when he is going to, you know, make his retaliation. He didn't have to cause a scene out at second base. He waited until McNeil wouldn't freaking let it go and then was like, all right, well, you want me to talk? I'll talk. And, you know, give him the crybaby thing, which is – that one's is timeless. It's a great troll job to do, you know, cry about it.
Right.
Yeah, man. Look, that's baseball.
Yeah. And it's not like he slid cleats up directly into his knee. Now, look, I looked up the rule because there have been times in the past where I've tweeted about a rule and then realized I wasn't exactly correct with the rule. So I didn't want to do that this time. I wanted to be sure I knew the letter of the law. And by the letter of the law, technically, Rhys Hoskins was in violation because it says that you cannot – you have to slide into the bag, which he did, but you cannot change your path to interfere with a guy making a play to go to first base on double play. Like, you can't change your path to interfere. And he did. He was headed for the bag. He went to slide to the left, his left of the bag to try and break up the double play. He did slide through the bag, but he kept contact with it and he kept his hand on the bag. So if you want to be nitpicky about the rule, I guess technically he's in violation. I still don't see anything wrong with the slide. And
can my opinion be that rule is stupid anyway?
It is stupid. It is completely stupid. All you have to do is look back to Buster Posey and getting completely trucked at the plate. And that's why all these rules are in place now, because he was the best catcher in baseball. He was a golden boy and he was lost the season early in the season with a completely destroyed ACL because of getting trucked at the plate. And like you said, I said this and somebody said, where else is he supposed to play on his feet? You're not supposed to plant your feet anywhere at any time in the infield. Now, look, I probably sound like a douchebag when I talk about my playing when it compares to the people that are playing in the majors. But my point here is that if I play, the highest level I've ever played in is at college, and I played middle infield my whole life, and I was taught to catch the ball on a relay to second coming through the bag so you can clear the lane yourself and make a solid throw to first base. Jeff McNeil has been playing second base his entire life. He's a major league second baseman. He's been slid into on double plays his entire life, okay? He had his foot planted on the back of the bag, adjusted to a bad throw, kept his foot planted and his front leg straight to try and make that throw. It's as much on him as it is Rhys Hoskins, because it's like infielding 101 that's not how you take the relay at second base, right? Yeah. And, you know, this is just something that happens. To me, it was a completely indicative of the situation in the game where you're losing late, your team's not that good, and you're probably upset about it on opening day. Maybe he's upset no matter what the situation is, but if he's played baseball enough to get to where he is, this has happened time and time and time again. And it's clear as day. There's no intent to hurt him there. He's playing baseball to break up a double play. So
yeah.
In conclusion, Jeff McNeil, shut the hell up. All right. If you or a loved one has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit helpmygamblingproblem.org for free confidential services. John Means, are we betting on him, Ryan, to pitch for the Orioles in April? He will be starting a rehab assignment very soon for the Tigers. He got announced on their opening day yesterday as part of their club.
I think April is maybe a little ambitious, but Means did say that he was shooting for the end of April. So he said that about a week ago at a spring game. Yeah, I could see it, but if I were betting money on it, I would say May is more likely.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the teams that the Orioles are facing, the two best teams that they're going to play this first month of the year are Minnesota, who lost Sonny Gray, and Milwaukee, who lost Corbin Burnes, Brendan Woodruff, and Devin Williams. So, you know, maybe you don't need to rush him back because the rest of the staff can handle it. And with that in mind, Tyler Wells is your number three starter. Dean Kramer, your number four. Cole Irvin, your number five. Which guy is the first man out when John Means returns? It's got to be Cole Irvin, right?
I think it's got to be Cole Irvin. I think that could change in the next month.
It absolutely could.
Depending on how they pitch. But, yeah, I think that, you know, Wells isn't going to the bullpen yet. Dean Kramer's not going to the bullpen yet. I think Irvin's got to be the guy. Especially considering it looks like that 96 miles an hour we saw from him in his first spring outing might not be the real Cole Irvin. I think he's probably a little more suited for a bullpen role. Yeah, I mean, depending on how they pitch over the next couple weeks, it certainly could change. But I think that Irvin's your odd man out once one of the healthy guys gets back.
I agree. I think he's your odd man out as well. We're going to do here a little bit of an AL East wrap around here, or wrap up, so to speak. I want to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Royal Farms. Rofo chicken is cheaper by the dozen. Right now, get a 12-piece mix for just $20. Plus, you can get two hot good-to-go sandwiches for just $6, and a family order of Western fries is just $5. So stop by your neighborhood Royal Farms today for these and other great offers. Around the horn here in the American League East. I just heard myself, I think, through your screen.
I'll volume down, Ted.
Last night, the Rays beat the Jays 8-2. Brandon Lau hit a grand slam, and Aaron Civale struck out six in six innings of one-run balls. Rays took down the Blue Jays 8-2 to even the series. George Springer hit a second home run in the loss. The Yankees took advantage of some Astros wildness and some shoddy defense, scoring seven runs in the game's final three frames, including a 110-mile-an-hour shot that went 419 feet off the bat of Giancarlo Stanton as the Yanks upended the Astros 7-1. And finally, in what turned out to be a pitcher's duel, George Kirby tossed 6 2/3 shutout innings, striking out eight, and J.P. Crawford provided all the offense in this one with a six-inning solo shot to lead the Mariners past the Red Sox 1-0. Nick Pivetta was the hard luck loser in this one, allowing one run on just three hits while striking out 10 over six innings. So right now, Yankees 2-0, Blue Jays and Rays 1-1, and I believe that the Red Sox are 0-2.
I think so.
Or maybe that was the first game for them. I think they played.
They played because Luis Castillo started game one for the Mariners, and he gave up a few runs. Maybe the Red Sox.
Oh yeah, they won 6-4. So the Red Sox are 1-1. Yankees 2-0. Rays and Jays also 1-1. Orioles 1-0, a half game back of the New York Yankees through one game of the season. Orioles taking on the Astros today. Grayson Rodriguez takes the bump as the Orioles look to win the opening series over the Angels. By the way, I know it's a little late in the show, but if you want us to interact with you, get your comments into our chat. We have a whole segment for it to end things here on the show. Without any comments, we just got to vamp for like 5 to 10 minutes. So,
hey, you know, we can.
Yeah, we can vamp. Anyway, Grayson Rodriguez taking the bump at 405 at Camden Yards against the Angels today. Angels are going to counter with Griffin Canning and Ryan. I was led to believe that the Orioles were facing three lefties in the opening series, but Griffin Canning's a righty.
Yeah, I personally didn't look. I don't know where we got that impression.
That's what we were told by everybody.
Yeah, I mean, so who else had? So it was Sandoval on opening day. Mm-hmm. Reed Detmers has to be tomorrow then, right?
I guess.
And I thought it was like a Tyler Anderson or something. I don't know. I'm not sure who else they have in their rotation, to be honest. The Angels have a pretty forgettable roster.
Yeah, Tyler Anderson, Patrick Sandoval, and Reed Detmers. I think that's who we all thought that we were getting. And then you have Griffin Canning and Chase Silseth are the two righties. And, you know, if you're going to have your opening series, you want your three best pitchers. That's going to be Anderson, Sandoval, and Detmers. But Griffin Canning getting the start, maybe they just wanted to switch it up after getting absolutely crushed with a lefty on the mound on the opening day.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if this was a more recent decision, if they changed something. But, yeah, I thought it was three lefties as well. Anyway, it would be good to get a righty up there. You know, obviously, you know, Sandoval came out and the Orioles put up five runs. He didn't get out of the second inning. So that was good to see. I had a feeling that lefties would be a little bit of a problem for the Orioles this year. I was a little surprised that they had Gunnar Henderson hitting leadoff. I'm not sure if that's just going to be his spot this year, or if that was, you know, something of a vote of confidence of the strides he's taken against left-handed pitching. I don't know if it was just because it was opening day and Hyde wanted Henderson and Rutschman at the top two guys on opening day. So we'll see when we get another lefty if Gunnar's still at the top, because I do really like him in that leadoff role. I know a lot of people had him slotted in, hitting second or third this year. I prefer him hitting leadoff, but we'll see what happens. I personally want my best hitters hitting as often as possible, mm-hmm. and Gunnar Henderson is probably your best hitter. I'm curious to see if they, you know, continue with that trend or if it was just an opening day thing. But good to see him, you know, break it up with a righty in this afternoon.
Yeah, I against the righty, I have to imagine he would still be hitting leadoff. Is Cedric Mullins going to be at the bottom of the order? He would be your next obvious choice to bat leadoff, but, you know, yeah. and against lefties, he does always bat lower, but maybe he just bats lower overall now. Maybe that's just the player that he's become. He was a leadoff hitter in 21 and 22 because he was the only guy that really had the experience and that you were comfortable having him do that. But now yeah. you've got other guys who can fill that role. With that in mind, lineup's not out yet for the Orioles today, but we can probably take a solid guess at what it's going to look like. So my mock lineup for today, I have Gunnar Henderson leading off at shortstop, Adley Rutschman batting second at catcher, Anthony Santander batting third, playing right field. I have Ryan O'Hearn batting fourth, playing first base, Ryan Mountcastle batting fifth, DHing, Austin Hayes playing left field, batting sixth, Jordan Westberg playing third base, batting seventh, Ramon Arias batting eighth, playing second base, and Cedric Mullins batting ninth and playing center field. Although I think you could switch Westberg and Arias with the positions and maybe even the spot in the order. It could be Westberg at second and Arias at third and Westberg eighth and Arias seventh. I don't really know. I don't really care. I'm pretty sure that's what the lineup's going to look like today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I don't see any major changes. I think Mateo is going to be in there against lefties, but probably not starting against righties. Arias, I'm curious what Ramon Arias's role is going to be, how often he's going to start, how often he's going to play. He was in the opening day lineup against the lefty. I expect him to be in the lineup against the righty. He hits righties better than he hits lefties. I kind of have a feeling Arias is going to be pretty close to an everyday guy. Mm-hmm. They had Westberg DHing on opening day, which could speak to that.
They say Brandon Hyde said Westberg's going to get a lot of at-bats.
Yeah.
So he's going to play almost every day. I do want to make one amendment here. Ryan Mountcastle has reverse splits. Like, not reverse splits. He just doesn't hit righties nearly as well as he hits lefties.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna switch it. I'm going to say that Santander is going to be DHing and Colton Cowser is going to be batting fifth, playing right field.
You think no Mountcastle?
I think no Mountcastle today.
Do you think he's a more of a platoon guy now, or do you think are you saying that because you think they're going to want to get Cowser into the lineup?
I think they want to get Cowser and O'Hearn into the starting lineup, and O'Hearn plays first base, mashes righties. Cowser mashes righties, and he did mash lefties in spring training, but I think they want to get him into the lineup. I think it's a waste of Colton Cowser if he's just your fourth outfielder with the occasional spot start that comes off the bench. I think that he's here to be almost an everyday player. I think he's going to be in right field today and Santander is going to DH, and that you're going to see Mountcastle on the bench. I don't think it's always going to be that way, but it's game two. oh, Hartenkowski didn't get the start on Thursday. I think early in the season, that's what's going to happen. And it's going to, but I also think it's going to be up to A, O'Hearn and Kowser to keep those roles, and B, Mountcastle to earn the right to not be a platoon player after what he did against Ruddies last year.
That's true. Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. I think, you know, you need to have a guy like Kowser in there pretty regularly if you're going to have him on the big league roster. You know, we've seen what he's capable of. And I think that, you know, his bat in the middle of that lineup could be huge for this team going forward. I like Mountcastle too much to make him a platoon guy, especially
if he's
going to be a weak side platoon, not as many lefty starters. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I don't disagree with your points. I feel like you got to get Mountcastle in there. He's one of your middle of the order bats, whether he should be or not, is a discussion we've had before. But yeah, I don't know, man. There's too many guys who deserve to be playing on a regular basis, and I would argue that four of them are not even on the roster.
Yeah, four of them aren't even on the roster, and you know, it's funny. I said to my buddy when we were at the game on Thursday, I was like, O'Hearn came in to pinch hit. I was like, man. He's already pinch hitting for Westberg. I think O'Hearn's gonna have a regression and take a step back this year. And he immediately rips a double in the right field. And I was like, okay,
that's how it goes.
But I could be very wrong. Mountcastle could very well be in the lineup hitting fourth for the team day. It would not shock me either way. It would shock me to see Kowser not starting today in right field. I would be shocked to see him not in the lineup in some way, shape, or form.
You know he's not going to be in the lineup tomorrow against the lefty.
Yeah, which is stupid because he hit 625 with an over 2,000 OPS in spring. I know it's spring, but like the guy can hit lefties.
Yeah,
he can hit lefties. Like that's still one of my biggest gripes with Brandon Hyde is that he matches up. He over matches up. Like some guys are everyday players. Like the fact that Gunnar Henderson was leading off against a lefty on Thursday tells me that Gunnar Henderson's going to lead off every game.
Yeah.
Because if he's leading off against a lefty and he hits righties better, like to me, that kind of was a look into what's going to happen this year. He can play shortstop and he's going to bat first just about every day this year until he gives him a reason not to bat him first. Like maybe he's got 40 home runs by August and he's like, all right, you got to hit the middle of our order. Like you're this is ridiculous. It's all 39 solo shots. But yeah, I have to imagine that Kowser's going to be in the lineup today. And I think that O'Hearn will be as well, especially after getting that double coming cold off the bench.
Yeah. I will say regarding Henderson, I think the only scenario in which I would advocate for moving him out of the leadoff spot is if we see a return to 2021 for Cedric Mullins, where he's, you know, hitting home runs, he's stealing bases, he's a table setter, he's getting on base a ton, he's hitting at least 260, 270 on base, 340, 350. You know, that's where you want Cedric Mullins. And I think if he's able to produce the way he did when he had that 30-30 season, then I absolutely love him at the top of the lineup. And Gunner as the three is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Until Mullins proves that he is still that guy, I like Gunner at one.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. You can join Glenn Clark and Griffin Bass next Saturday night at the baseball game for the national semi, after the baseball game for the national semifinal games in that basketball tournament thingy with a name we're not allowed to say in a commercial. The GCR crew will be at Sports and Social Inside Live Casino and Hotel watching and helping you bet the games. Plus, they'll have great giveaways, including live swag, baseball tickets, gift cards, and more. There's no better place to watch the games just steps away from the FanDuel Sportsbook. So hang out with Glenn and Griffin next Saturday, April 6th. Missing this would be madness. I wanted to do a little extra flair there.
add some flair.
Add some flair, some Ric Flair. Woo!
Woo!
Got some chats here, only two. Tyler Brown says, hey, guys, I'm here. Thanks for being here, Tyler. Nice to see you. We're here too. And then the Back It Up Binge podcast. Hyde really splits up the righty-lefty batter. Scratch my head also having Mounty third, but it worked, so I will take it. Yeah, Mountcastle's not really a number three hitter. I thought, based on what he did in the minor leagues, that he was going to be a three hitter, and he's going to be a guy who is going to end up hitting 300 with 40 home runs at the big league level, because all he ever did in the minors was hit 300 with power. You know, so I felt that that was going to be what he'd eventually become in the major leagues. To this point, he's more a guy who tops out at about 270 with power, but, you know, he's got to prove that he belongs in the middle of the order and that he's an everyday player. What he did against righties last year was absolutely atrocious. It was absolutely atrocious. So those are really the only comments that we've got today, and it's after the 11 o'clock hour. So one last time, remind you that if you're craving that classic New York deli experience, then look no further than the new Atman's Deli in Baltimore's Harbor Point. Corned beef piled high, hand-rolled bagels, and something different, a bar. Atman's Harbor Point. Go to atmansdeli.com for daily specials. Orioles taking on the Angels, 405. Grayson Rodriguez on the bump, getting the start in the Orioles' second game of the season. Tyler Brown wants to know, who is the one team that is going to give the O's fits this year? Nobody. Nobody. They're better than everybody. If it's going to be one team, like, do they play the Mariners twice? The Mariners are really good.
It's going to be a weird team. It's going to be a team that's not supposed to give us a fit.
Right. So like the Yankees, yeah, right?
I mean, we've seen that in years past with, like, the Cubs and the Diamondbacks. Like, we go to their stadium and get swept, even though we're worlds better than that team. It seems to always happen in the weirdest instance. I think the Yankees could catch a stroke of good luck and give the Orioles a run for their money, maybe take 2 out of 3-1 series from them, maybe. I don't know.
RL Topper says Cleveland always gives us trouble. That's true. They do. I feel like every time we play Cleveland, the Orioles play Cleveland, it's in Cleveland. Like, I feel like Cleveland never comes here.
I feel like
– But they do. Obviously, they do.
The last time I remember Cleveland coming here, I'm pretty sure we beat them 13-0 on back-to-back days.
Cleveland came here – that happened. That was in 2019. I remember that.
That was that long ago?
Yeah, that was 2019 because Santander was a rookie. That was the game where they had one of those games. They had the Maryland flag sleeves, and the British Santander fan club was out in left field when Tony was playing left field. That was one of those games won back to back games 13-0. No, Cleveland came here last year over Memorial Day weekend. That's when Seti blew out his hamstring.
That's right.
On Memorial Day when they lost like 15-2. So, yeah, Cleveland definitely comes here. I just feel like when they come here, they take 2 out of 3. And when the Orioles go there, they take 2 out of 3. And they do give the Orioles fits. But I feel like a team that's supposed to give the Orioles fits this year, like didn't they go, like, 1-6 against Detroit 2 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Like, they went, like, 1-6 against Detroit in 2022 randomly.
Because I think Detroit – I'm pretty certain Detroit was the last team – to sweep the Orioles in a regular season series.
I think it may have been. Yeah, because they got swept 3 games in, like, early May against Detroit in 2022.
Yeah, so that was Detroit, and then Adley comes up, and we don't get swept anymore until playoffs.
Postseason. But, hey.
Good vibes today.
And, look, if postseason stats don't count towards regular season numbers, then postseason series sweeps don't count either. The Orioles – streak of not getting swept lives on because they won on opening day. So it continues. They're going for the series win today with Grayson Rodriguez on the bump. That lineup should be coming out in the next couple of hours. I can't wait to see it. I can't watch DL Hall today. RL Topper's asking if we're watching DL Hall today. I have a this is the day where I work all 3 jobs. I do this, I do open houses, and then I work at the restaurant. So I can't even watch the Orioles. I'll have them up on my phone while waiting tables. It's Easter weekend, so we might not be busy, or maybe we will. I have no effing clue, but I'm not going to get to watch anything outside of the occasional glimpse at the Orioles game.
Yeah. Too much Easter stuff going on. I would like to try to watch some DL Hall, but
yeah.
We've got somewhere to be this afternoon, so it would be on my phone.
God, I maybe I'll go out of my way. What time is that game today? Brewers and Mets.
The Brewers game?
Yeah, I got it right here. Oh, it's at 1:40. My open house ends at 2. Maybe I'll turn it on the way home, and that'll be what I watch until the Orioles start at 4:00. So, all right, we got to get going. 12:10. You must live in Central Standard Time, or Central Time. But guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Without you, we don't have a show. Thank you to all of our listeners. Without you, we certainly do not have a show. Thank you to Ryan. Great job as always. Thanks to the Orioles for giving us something awesome to talk about. Until next week, see you.